The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Good day, everybody, and welcome to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I'm your host, Jody Green, from the University of Nebraska, and we'll be talking termites today. I have a special guest with me via Skype, Hannah Davis, who just completed her master's degree studying subterranean termites. Congratulations, Hannah, and welcome to Arthropod. Will you please tell the listeners where you are in the world and how you ended up there?
Hi there. I am in Berlin, where I've been doing my master's degree, but I'm originally from Ottawa in Canada. I actually came to Berlin a while before I started studying, because when I finished high school in Canada, I started studying, well, actually, initially I thought biology, and then I ended up doing computer science, but I dropped out. Then I decided that I just wanted to get out of Canada and go somewhere else. And so I did. I ended up in Germany, improved my German, and then realized that I could study here tuition free. So I got my bachelor's and now also my master's in biology here in Berlin.
Well, I think that's pretty amazing. I am so happy that you are a termite person. But did your appreciation and love for insects, was that an acquired adult discovery, or did you always enjoy insects and nature as a child?
As a child, I liked animals in general, and mm-hmm. I did enjoy watching insects, but I didn't get serious about it until at some point in my 20s. So I guess I came to entomology as a science fairly late, but I did have this interest from an early age.
It's pretty neat. It's always interesting to find out what entomologists' backgrounds are and if they always liked, you know, the bug world or not. Well, just to let the listeners know, the topic this week for the podcast in honor of Termite Awareness Week is about termites. So I myself studied termites in grad school, and so I have a fondness and a fury when I think about studying them. I think of them as soft-bodied, complex, soil-dwelling social creatures. But I think we should probably start from the basics, because not everyone is a termite researcher or familiar with them. So I don't know if we can be basic, but if we could start talking about what is a termite. Hannah, do you want to try to do that one?
I can try. Well, the simplest way to put it is termites are social cockroaches. And they're not. It's not just social, it's specifically eusocial. And this is a special term used for highly social insects, for example, like honeybees or some of the social wasps. And it means that you have cooperative food care, overlapping generations, and division of labor. So that makes termites kind of a special group, because they're the biggest eusocial insect taxon outside the social Hymenoptera. So the social Hymenoptera being the bees and the wasps and the ants, the social species of those.
So everyone's got like a job to do, right? Sometimes they may look and appear a little different, but they have like specific roles in the colony, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated because not all termite species are the same or even have the same roles in their colonies.
Oh, yeah, that's
but
true.
Almost all of them have at least soldiers, which are a sterile caste, and their entire purpose is defending the colony. And they also have reproductives. And then some species, in addition to those, have workers, which are, as the name suggests, a specialized worker caste.
Well, I think for my job in extension, so when I get a lot of homeowners or clients calling me about termites, so when they think about termites, they think, like, number one, ew, that's gross. Number two, like, they're eating my house, is going to cost me a lot of money. So it's important to know that, you know, termites are able to break down cellulose. And so that's, you know, plant material, soil, grasses, wood, bark. And so homeowners don't like it because this also includes paper products and building material. And so it's typically their houses or their barns or some kind of structure. But it's kind of like a human's fault though, right? Because we've built our structures made of the most delicious, abundant termite food source. And so we're kind of asking for trouble. But in the greater sense of the world and ecosystem, termites are actually really beneficial, right?
That's right. Out of the approximately 3,100 termite species that are currently known,
wow,
only 6.1% are known to cause any kind of damage. And only 2.8%, 83 species, cause significant damage.
Yeah, so
that means there's... the vast majority of termites are just out there in the ecosystem or in the environment providing ecosystem services.
Yeah.
For example, breaking down wood in the forest. You know, they're turning wood, which is very difficult to break down, into termite biomass, and then those termites are in turn eaten by other things. The subterranean species as well are also moving soil around, and so they actually do play very important roles in the cycling of nutrients out in the wilderness.
Yeah, so sometimes people think of like the big termite mounds, you know, that we don't have here in the U.S., but, you know, they're thought of as like their own architects and that they can control their environment, and just that they're pretty amazing creatures if you think about it.
They really are.
Yeah, I think we both have a fondness for them.
Yeah, even the species that we do have in the temperate regions that don't build those mounds, they're still controlling their environment inside the tunnels, just not in such a grand way as the mound builders in tropical regions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we should probably narrow down the, you know, the type of termite that we're going to focus on. So let's focus on the eastern subterranean termite, Reticulatermes flavipes, since it is the main pest species here in the Midwest, and also it's the subject of your research and also my research way back at Purdue many years ago. I was always a little bit jealous of other researchers who found it so easily to describe their insect's life cycle. Like, you know, as an entomologist, we always say, you know, things are complete metamorphoses or incomplete metamorphoses. And, you know, this is the way it goes, egg, nymph, adult. But for termites, it's so much more complicated than that. And I always found myself getting really confusing other people talking about it. But, you know, maybe you're a little better at giving the caste system and a little bit of an overview.
I can try, but I should warn you, it is still going to be a bit complicated just because that's the biological reality.
Right. And no matter like, how much you study it, it just gets more confusing, don't you think? Like,
absolutely.
Yes. Okay,
absolutely.
Good. I'm glad
the
it's not just
the other caveat
me.
Is everything that I'm going to say here applies to Reticulatermes flavipes, but does not necessarily apply to all other termite species.
Okay, that's our disclaimer.
Yes, very important disclaimer
on
every aspect of termite biology.
Okay.
So, Reticulatermes flavipes has three main castes. You have the reproductive caste, and most famous, the queen and the king, because termites have both. So,
royalty.
Quality.
Royalty.
Yes, yes. Immatures on the reproductive line are called nymphs. And then you have secondary reproductives as well, in addition to the king and queen, that also contribute to reproductive output of the colony. So those are either Brachypteris neotenix, which are secondary reproductives derived from nymphs that never grow wings. They just have these little wing buds. That's what the Brachypteris part means. Or you have ergatoids, which are secondary reproductives derived from workers. And they basically look like fat workers. And they're quite rare in nature, but we do see them in the lab sometimes. Okay, so that's the reproductive class. Caste, rather. Then you have the worker caste. And they do almost all the work in the colony. They're really specialized to this. And generally, workers have almost no chance of ever reproducing. So they're not exactly sterile, but close enough.
Mm-hmm.
Their only chance to potentially reproduce would be if they become an ergatoid, and there's also some chance they might hop over the reproductive line because termites are weird. You've got this plasticity in the caste system. The workers can also turn into soldiers, so this is the third main caste, and the soldiers are completely sterile, and their entire purpose is defending the colony. They can't do anything else. They can't eat wood, they can't even feed themselves in any way, shape, or form. So they're completely dependent on the other members of the colony, but then the other members of the colony depend on them as well for protection.
Mm-hmm. And so soldiers have these like enlarged kind of orange-ish heads and these giant mandibles. And so you think that they would be the most amazing things, but not being able to feed yourself kind of puts a damper on your life.
Yeah, but they're still very important. And mm-hmm. from what we know of termite evolution, soldiers were actually the first sterile castes to evolve. So this is different from ants, for example, where a soldier caste is quite rare, only some of them have it. In ants, the workers evolved first, whereas in termites, it was the soldiers that evolved first, and then in some lineages, workers evolved. But another aspect of termite caste system, which I haven't gone into yet, is larvae.
Oh, yes.
I wouldn't really call these a separate caste, but it's larvae are basically baby termites that haven't figured out what caste they're in yet. In Reticula termes flavipes, it's the first two instars. So after they hatch, you have these two larval stages, and we call them larvae because the name nymph is already taken. And then after the second larval stage, they will differentiate into either workers or nymphs.
So then as a larvae, the sky's the limit, kind of. It's not predetermined, so they can become anything.
We don't really know.
Should we say what some of the roles are that the workers do? Because they do all the work, but do you want to talk about all the work? There's a lot of work in a termite
That's
colony
true.
That needs to be done.
That's true. So most of the digging, most of the eating as well. So
the damage.
The termites that are eating holes in your house, those are going to be the workers. Nymphs can also work to some extent, although I'm not sure how much they actually do it in the wild. Like, I've seen them doing mm-hmm. it in a petri dish, like mm-hmm. feeding a little bit, digging a little bit, but in the wild, I think workers do almost everything, and the nymphs just kind of stand around and act lazy.
So they groom each other, and they feed each other.
Yeah, termites groom each other pretty much all the time. It's really important just to keep themselves clean and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And workers do almost all of that. I'm not sure whether nymphs also groom each other or not. The secondary reproductives don't seem to. They kind of palpate each other from time to time, but I haven't seen them grooming. Workers also do the bulk of the brood care. So they will take eggs and they'll put them in little piles. And sometimes they'll pick up an egg and kind of move it around in their mouths and get it all slobbery. And they also take care of the larvae, and also soldiers, because neither caste can feed themselves.
Yeah.
As well as taking care of the reproductives, of course.
Yeah. So they really do all the work. So one of the things I really liked about you, I felt so many similarities between the two of us. And so it was the termites that drew me to you on Twitter in the first place. But I'm also originally from Canada, and I studied termites. I also enjoy taking photos of insects, though I think yours are a lot nicer than mine. And you have spider love. I love spiders. But when you started posting about those little termite larvae and how cute they were, I was like, oh my gosh, we're so alike. I think even today, didn't you post something about a little larvae that's fallen over and can't get up? And they look like little puppies.
Yeah.
They look like little puppies. And I've never heard anyone say about how cute they were. So I was like, you know, I just like her. I don't know. Is there anything that you know, about you in your personal life that you could share with listeners to know, let them know what else you like to do besides study termites?
Before I say something that isn't about termites, let me just quickly say something about the termite larva that I posted on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I believe, a first instar larva, and they have these ridiculously oversized heads, and they can barely walk. They remind me of newborn kittens. So, you know, they can kind of walk, but really shakily. And if they fall over, they can't really get back up again. So that's what's happening in the animated GIF that I posted. I think we could share that in the show notes.
Yes.
And they are seriously adorable.
They're cute. They almost look like little Fraggles. I don't know. Did you watch that in Canada? Like, the and they're so hairy. Yeah. I don't know. They're adorable.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't spend all of my time doing termite stuff. As you mentioned, I am into photography. I like to sometimes just go out and photograph whatever I can find, which is not going to be termites because we don't actually have any wild termites in Germany.
That is cool to know.
But they're not everywhere. But we've got a lot of other cool things here. A lot of interesting wild bees, for example, that I quite like chasing around with my camera. And spiders, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, I enjoy it. You should put together like a calendar or show your work in like a gallery. Last year, I took some pictures and a little art gallery asked me to put in some pictures, and I sold a couple, and then I ended up donating the money to charity because I just thought it was such a strange thing for me to do because I don't even think of myself as a photographer. But it was interesting to see my work on walls. So yours are definitely worth taking a look at, though.
Congratulations for that. I haven't managed to get my work into a gallery yet. I would love to do that at some point.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I just remembered one other non-insect-related thing which I do like to do.
Okay.
And that's listen to podcasts.
Oh, okay.
I have note to listen to this one. And I would also like to plug some of my other favorites.
Yeah, please do.
Notably, This Week in Virology, This Week in Parasitism, This Week in Microbiology, This Week in Evolution. It's a group of podcasts all kind of from one particular guy and then some other people who he hosts podcasts with. They can all be found at microbe.tv. And so if you're interested in science podcasts containing some really serious science, check those out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have 2 hours commute every day, and so I'm just, I love listening to podcasts, and anytime someone recommends a book to me, I'm like, can I get the audiobook? Just give me, like, the title, because I can read, like, reference books, and that's about it. So, but yeah, it looks like, I mean, is it every week, then, or something? Like, every week there's those topics?
This Week in Virology actually is weekly. The other ones are not. I think This Week in Microbiology is actually every 2 weeks, and This Week in Parasitism is like, I'm not sure if that's every 2 weeks or every month, but yeah, This Week in Virology at least is released. They record it every Friday, I believe, and then it usually drops at some point on Sunday.
Cool. Well, thank you for those. Should we get back to termites?
I think we probably.
Oh, okay. Okay. So one of the things that I was always jealous about was that life cycle thing. So I didn't know if you wanted to, now that we know all the players, all the casts in the colony, if we could explain the simplest way of how they go through that life cycle and how other termites go through their life cycle.
Okay. There are two basic patterns that you find in termites. One is what's it called? Yeah. Either you can have a linear pathway where you go from egg to larva and the larvae just get bigger and bigger and bigger. They're sometimes called pseudor gates because people thought they were workers, but they're not. And then they can, from large larvae, they'll turn into neotenics or, primary reproductive or soldiers. So this is kind of a linear pathway.
Hannah, does flavipes have pseudor gates?
Kind of.
Okay. Because I was like, wait a second, I haven't heard the term pseudor gate.
Everything.
Wow.
They have pseudor gates sensu stricto. The pseudor gates sensu lato are the ones in the linear pathway. I can try to explain this later, but let me just go through the basics.
Because I hadn't heard that term in a long time, and I was like, wait a second, maybe I repressed those pseudor gates. Okay,
yeah,
carry on.
It depends on which paper you read sometimes as well. The terminology can change. So yeah, linear pathway, and then the other basic pathway is the bifurcated pathway, so forked. And in this pathway, you have an egg, and then some larval stages, and then either the reproductive line, or it goes the other way to worker line. And Reticulotermes flavipes has a bifurcated pathway.
Mm-hmm.
But because termites are super diverse and complicated, even within the same family, you have some species which have a linear pathway, just because, you know, otherwise it'd be way too easy. So, the life cycle of Reticulotermes flavipes, you have two larval stages, as I said before, and then either nymph or worker. The nymphs, they get bigger and bigger and bigger until you get to the sixth instar, and then you have another fork. Either they become Brachyteris neotenix through a little intermediary stage.
Okay, so they're reproductive.
Or, yes, okay. The Brachyteris neotenix can reproduce, but they don't have wings. They just have these little tiny wing buds, and they stay in the natal nest and reproduce there. Or from they can the nymph can develop into a long-winged-budded nymph. So the nymphs, right from the start, have these little wing buds, and in the long-winged-budded nymph, as the name suggests, the wing buds get really long. And then that turns into an alate. So this is a winged termite. If you've ever seen termites swarming, this is the cat, or this is the, this is what I mean. And those alates are the ones that become the future kings and queens. And so this is also reproductive. These are also reproductives, but unlike the Brachyteris neotenix, they disperse and hopefully mate with someone from a different colony as opposed to the Brachyteris neotenix, which are mating with their brothers and sisters. Yeah, again, termites are weird.
Mm-hmm.
The other line is the worker line. At the sixth instar, a worker can differentiate into a soldier through an intermediary, or under rare occasions, it can turn into an ergotoid, which is also reproductive. This one does not have wing buds at all. It just looks like a fat worker, and it stays in the natal colony and mates with its brothers and sisters there.
Yes, but we used to call those...
happens very often in the wild.
We used to call those plumpies.
Yeah, well, the neotenics are also pretty fat, but yeah. But yeah. In addition to all of this, just because this is not complicated enough, you can also have nymphs which kind of hop over onto the worker line. And these are called pseudogates. And some authors say that you can also sometimes have workers that start to grow wing buds and hop over to the nymph line. So if you try to draw this out, it's just a mess.
Yeah, so it seems like they all could be what they want to be. They can go back and forth, except the soldier is a terminal cast, right? Like, they can't go back from that.
Not in Reticulotermes flavipes, anyway.
Oh, gosh.
I don't want to say anything that might be false. I don't know whether that might occur somewhere else.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that most people can't appreciate the complexity, and it sounds like we have no idea what we're talking about, except that these things actually do happen. A lot of times, like for, you know, non-entomologists or homeowners, the swarming termites or the alates, that's what they see in their house. Sometimes that's what gives them an indication that they may have a problem, when they either call my office or they're calling a pest management company to see if it's a termite. But, I'll talk a little bit about the termite swarm. So that's, you said about like mating flights and, you know, increasing the genetic diversity. So, what happens here in the Midwest is that if, you know, the right environmental conditions, so it's usually, you know, a good temperature, humidity's high, often it's after good rain, so the soil is soft. But what happens is that a mature colony will set flight to these, alates or reproductives. And at this point they have, you know, they have eyes, they're pretty darkened, they kind of look like ants. But, you know, it's to go out and disperse and create new colonies. A lot of times when it's inside a home though, they're not very good flyers and there's no wind to take them up and away. So they get caught in like windowsills or near lights, and they end up dying. So they're not really, you know, spreading their genes or dispersing. So it actually defeats the goal of swarming. So I wonder if that's one of the reasons, you know, they've they found to, like, supplementary reproductives. I don't know. Thoughts about that?
Well, there are advantages and disadvantages to both this, being a neotenic or being an alate. So the neotenics, they get to stay in the nest where it's nice and safe, and they have a higher chance of being able to reproduce there, of course, because they're less likely to just be eaten by something or fly into a window. But their reproductive options are somewhat limited. In most species, we can maybe go into some of the exceptions later. This is an inbreeding cycle. So if you have too much inbreeding, that can bring cause problems of its own. The alates are able to disperse, so they're able to get to access new resources, and they're also able to access mates that are not close relatives. And that can be good, just because it's the opposite of inbreeding.
Yes.
although there are some papers showing that mating with distant relatives can cause some problems for termites, because sometimes diseases can be passed over that the non-relative is not resistant to, and it's a very risky time in a termite's life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, should we stop about life cycles and go on to something else? Because I just keep shaking my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so confusing. How about we can talk about, like, termites being a social cockroach, and that they've been found to most be related to the wood-eating cockroach. The Cryptocercus cockroaches, they're considered subsocial, so they are not anywhere eusocial or even social. So that type of sociality is maybe they care for their young for a short amount of time, but it's not like an organized society. What they do have in common, which they have found, is that they are able to ingest wood and cellulose. And I know you love talking about gut flatulence, so I will leave that up to you.
Yeah. So one of the earliest clues that termites really were social cockroaches came from the flagellates. These are single-celled organisms that are in the guts of both the lower termites, so a lot of termite species, but not all of them, as well as Cryptocercus. So the wood roach, which we now know is the closest relative of the termites within the cockroaches as a whole. These flagellates are found in a specialized pouch in the termite hindgut, and they help the termite digest cellulose. So wood is really difficult to break down, and the termites can't do it on their own. The rest of us, when we need help from other organisms in our gut, usually we will use bacteria, for example. Like, that's what humans have. We have all these bacteria in our guts that help us digest food. Termites, though, they mostly use these flagellates, these quite large single-celled organisms. But those flagellates themselves have their own bacterial and also archaeal symbionts that help them out. So it's this really complicated symbiosis that we still don't fully understand, and which is actually quite difficult to study because you can't culture any of them. However, what we do know is really, really fascinating because, well, it's just such a unique system.
Because we talk about bugs, but then there are bugs in their guts, and then there are bugs in the guts and the guts, right?
Yeah. So the flagellates, they can have bacteria on their surfaces, which can, do all kinds of things. Including helping them move around. There's something called motility symbionts. But they also have bacteria and archaea living inside them. So that's a little bit more like, how the termite has something inside it and that's helping it digest. The flagellates also have something inside them which are helping them digest.
Yes, we all, need. So it's called, the circle of life, right? So one thing we cannot ignore when we're talking about termites is trophallaxis. And because termites are like all other insects and arthropods, they've got exoskeletons. And in order to grow, they need to molt and shed their exoskeleton. And when they shed, they actually shed the contents of their hindgut and are the symbionts, and the gut flagellates are in there. And everybody knows I love, you know, talking about insect butts, but I'll let you explain it because I've seen some really great trophallaxis videos also on your Twitter.
Well, termites actually have two kinds of trophallaxis. There's stomatodial trophallaxis, which is when they're feeding each other from some glands in the head, so it's mouth-to-mouth feeding. The type of trophallaxis that's relevant, however, when after they molt, is called proctodial trophallaxis. And that is where the termite that's just molted gets some new flagellates from the anus of another termite. So it's anal mouth feeding. And yeah, it works.
Yeah, I think that
they need to get the
isn't it called in
sorry,
a fecal, like it could be like a fecal implant or something like that? Like, is it like that?
Right. It's because they really take it. It's some fluid from it's direct transfer of hindgut fluid from the rectal pouch to the mouth of the receiver, which sounds super gross. However, given that the flagellates are in the hindgut, where else are you going to get them?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that would be the way to do it. I know I've seen a presentation by Dr. Pereira from the University of Florida, and he always has a little diagram of like a termite and like a circle, kind of an arrow, and he always, I think it's called like the circle of crap, and it always makes me laugh because I don't know if a lot of people understand that, and I'm just like, yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh, they also eat feces. They don't like to waste anything. So termites in general eat very low nutrient food. And so, they generally don't waste anything that comes out of them. They also will eat their dead feces, which they do not eat. They use as a building material. They recycle.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they're like the world's recyclers, right? Well, and yeah, and so a lot of times when people are wondering if, you know, is this a carpentry damage or is this a termite damage, it's that characteristic mud or, you know, feces and that frass that is going to be the termites, right? Like carpenter ants will clear it out. They're carpenters. There's not going to be anything there. They'll kick out all the wood shavings and sawdust. But the termites will replace all that wood and cellulose they've eaten with poop, basically, right?
Yeah. Depending on the species. I think for the drywood species.
Oh, yeah. They do kick out.
Mm-hmm. So, again, everything we're talking about right now is specific to the subterranean termites, does not necessarily apply to others. But right. Yeah, with subterranean termites, they actually do bring real mud into their food. Like, they will bring soil up into this food sometimes, but most of what people describe as mud is actually poop.
Well, so that mutual exchange between termites, you know, they've got their purposes, but I think from what I tell people, you know, a lot of the technology today in terms of management has a lot to do with scientists studying, you know, the biology and ecology of termites so that we're using what we know about them kind of against them. And this is, of course, like our pest species, right? We don't want to, we love termites, but when they become a pest, and that depends where you are and if they're eating your home, whether they're a pest or not, but what they're doing when people call companies and they want to know, you know, why they have termites and maybe not their neighbors, it's usually often, you know, we've got cellulose in our homes, but it's like that conducive conditions that may, I don't know if I want to say attract, but have termite colonies, I guess, more apt to eating what they, what they're living in. So, improper grading, sometimes faulty gutters, or if they don't have any gutters, the downspouts. A lot of times wood to soil contact is a big one. If posts from decks or fences go right into the soil, that's just an easy way for termites that are already living in the soil to get, you know, above ground and get what they want. Firewood close to the house can sometimes, you know, bring termites right to the outside. And like companies that provide like termite baiting, so that relies on an attractive, palatable, cellulose-based toxin. And so what it does, the termites will eat it. And if it's, you know, a slow acting, then there's time for the foraging termites to take it back to the colony and go through trophallaxis, feed it to the soldiers, feed it to the other cast. And then, you know, sometimes that will be a detriment to the colony and that will knock them out. Another type of treatment that we often get calls about is the trench and treat method using non-repellent, like liquid insecticides or termiticides. And so what that does, it exploits the termite biology because they cannot detect that active ingredient or that chemical in the ground. In the past, it was more of a repellent, so, you know, they would go away from that area. And now they continue to forage in the area without knowing. And then they get back to the colony, and because of the grooming and trophallaxis, they can also spread that toxicant. So that's some ways that some of the researchers that, you know, termite biologists do can be used, that knowledge, against the termite colonies in pest situations. But this social behavior, though, could be some of the reasons why biocontrol doesn't work, right? And this maybe goes into some of your own master's research. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Hannah?
Yeah, sure. So the pesticides that are currently in use, in many cases, are not so great for the environment. In fact, I don't think any of them are particularly good for the environment because they're all generalist or non-specific pesticides that will kill anything that's in the soil. And some of these will also get into the environment, like they've been detected in waterways near mm-hmm. cities. And anyway, it's not good. So for decades, people have been trying to find an alternative. And one of the popular approaches is to try and use an entomopathogenic fungus, so a fungus that kills insects. One of these fungi is Metritzium anisopliae, which some of you might have heard of, actually, because it's used as a biopesticide against some other insects. However, after decades and decades of trying, we still haven't found a way to use it against termites. And that is because of something called social immunity. So, you know, an individual termite has its immune system, but the whole colony also has an immune system of sorts. And this social immune system is made up of behaviors like grooming, but also corpse disposal. I mentioned cannibalism before, but they will also bury their dead under some conditions. And they have all, basically they have this they have this behavioral repertoire which allows them to prevent an infection or stop it from spreading. And if you want to use a biopesticide to control a colony, you need it to spread. Subterranean species in particular are just not accessible to, you can't apply the biopesticide to all members of the colony because they're spread out over a very large area, mostly underground in tunnels which you don't even know about.
Yeah, you can't see them.
Exactly. And not only can you not see them, they are over a very large area in soil as well as in wood. So what I was looking at in my master's project was trying to understand some of these social immune behaviors, trying to understand specifically how it is that termites use grooming or cannibalism depending on the stage of infection of an individual. So how do they know whether an individual can be saved and should still be groomed, or whether it should be cannibalized? And I've added a photo actually to the show notes showing one of the things which termites will do. I've stained one of the termites there blue with blue Nile. This is a histological stain which we sometimes use in behavioral studies because it doesn't seem to affect their behavior. And then all those other termites are surrounding it and grooming it. They can actually swallow spores of the fungus before that fungus can germinate on the cuticle, and they can, and when the spores are in the termite gut, they can't germinate. And so this is actually a safe way to just remove the pathogen from an individual. And if you can avoid that individual becoming sick, then you can also avoid it spreading through the colony. If grooming doesn't work, however, if an individual does get sick, then the colony needs to get rid of that termite before it goes off somewhere and dies, because the fungus will then come back out of the corpse and will infect the rest of the colony. So what they do is they eat the termite alive, or if it dies and they catch it fast enough, then they'll still eat it. But if it's just lying around somewhere, then they have another line of defense, and that's burial. They'll actually poop on the corpse. They use their poop for everything, mm-hmm. and then cover it with whatever building materials they have on hand.
So, like, their poop is like duct tape. It's very
handy. Much.
Very handy. It's interesting because, like, the social insects, I mean, even ants, like, the way they can prevent disease is pretty cool. Even though, I mean, you wouldn't want to be eaten, but, I mean, they've got to protect the colony. That's part of being, you know, social, is it's for the good of the whole,
yeah.
right? I know.
Exactly.
You just don't even think about it. There's no I in team.
Yeah. Well, this is why it's useful to think about a social insect colony, whether it's termites or honeybees or ants. Just think about it as a superorganism.
Mm-hmm.
So the superorganism has this social immune system, and the whole point of this is to protect the colony as a whole. Sometimes that might be at the expense of individual termites or individual ants or honeybees or what have you. But as long as you can protect the colony, that's the most important thing. And our own bodies do something quite similar, actually. If we're sick with a virus, our immune system might sacrifice individual cells to save the entire body.
There's so many challenges trying to do, like, you know, artificial lab designs and then try to figure out if that would happen in field conditions. I think it's so hard to predict those things. And it's very interesting that there's just not a lot of termite biologists around. I mean,
yeah,
I know that Jonathan says, oh, you're the termite expert, but I'm like, no. I mean, I know I studied them for years and I've been around them, but like, I just never feel like I have a handle on things enough to be a termite expert, I guess.
Yeah, I've had the same feeling. I mean, I only have a master's degree, for crying out loud, and yet I'm often the termite expert. I've certainly been trying to learn as much as I can about termites, and I have worked with them, but often I'm in this position not because of what I know, but because there isn't anyone else. So I would love to see more people come into this field. There's more than enough to do. Termites have been researched, of course, but nowhere near as much as you might expect for an economically important social insect. And part of this is just because they're difficult to work with. But, you know, we do have some tools. It is possible. And with so many open research questions, it's just a great area to be in.
Yeah, it's interesting. And a lot of the researchers that I used to cite and follow when I was doing termite research, a lot of them are, you know, urban entomologists, and they're working on bed bugs right now. So there's, you know, a lot of excitement in that area. So maybe termites are not as, like, sexy and cool.
Bed bugs are also seriously awesome. I mean, not to have in your house, but just their biology. But with termites, I mean, even though it's a relatively small group of insects, every species is so different from every other one. They all have their own biology, and you can't just talk about, okay, termites do this, termites do that, because one species might do this, but then another species does something completely different.
Yeah,
and I find that really, really interesting.
Yeah, my family actually is from Trinidad and Tobago, and when my brother was there the last time, he was goofing around with the Nasutis termites, and he was like, you know, the nozzle heads, and he was just like playing around with them. He thought it was really cool. He's like, hey, I've thought about you.
They are seriously cool. I've never actually seen those.
Yeah,
we don't have any of those in our facility, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I've never been there, so I don't even know. But my parents were saying, like, the houses there don't have windows, and so sometimes they're like sitting down to eat dinner, and the legs of the tables are like half eaten away. By termites. So yeah, it's just like a different life, but it's like that's just how it is, you know. No one's doing anything to control it. That's what they're doing. They're just eating the table legs.
But
I think,
you know, most species aren't really serious pests.
Yeah, and I don't even know,
right?
And I don't even think they even consider those pests. It's just part of life. You know, but the termites have been in the news lately, though, because of this reclassification. You know, of the orders, For people who study termites, it's been known for quite a while, especially since the paper back in 2007, after genetic analysis showed that termites were more related, are actually social cockroaches. But it was only like last month that the Entomological Society of America updated their list and officially reclassified termites to be in the order of cockroaches, Blatodea. How do you think the rest of the naming will shake out? And if it were up to you, how would you rename or you know, work on that naming system?
Okay, you might get some emails for this because my opinion is not quite the same as that of some senior people in the field.
Well, then they could call us too, and we could have them talk too. It's just if anyone wants to talk about it, I'm excited. I'm interested to know. So,
yeah. Okay. So if we had known from the start that termites are social cockroaches, then we probably would have just made them one family. Like just for comparison, I think ants are one family.
Yep, Formicidae.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and for comparison, I think there's like 22,000 ant species compared to 3,100 termite species. So it would make sense to make them a family, but that didn't happen. Instead, they were made their own order. And then those 3,100 species were split up into families. We could just take all of those families, demoach them, and then put all the termites together in one family inside Blatodea. But there's some problems with that. First, because of zoological naming conventions, the only possible name for the termites would be Termitidae. And that name is already taken for one of the existing termite families. So if you wanted to use that name again, it would just be a complete mess. Also, demoting all the existing families would cause problems of its own. So right now, they are called, well, they are classed somewhere in between family and order. Some people, like the authors of that original 2007 paper,
mm-hmm.
Class them as the epifamily Termitoidae. And other people prefer to continue to use the name Isoptera as an infraorder. My view is that we should continue to use Isoptera, but like I said, there are definitely people who disagree with me on that.
Yes, I
my
do.
My reasoning,
like...
my reasoning is basically, if we're going to be shoving the termites in somewhere between order and family, it's already enough of a mess. We might as well just keep using the same name to make it as easy as possible for collections, people, for example, librarians, and also anyone doing literature search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Isoptera, right? The equal wing. It's so descriptive and, you know, that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
That will be
exactly
like that, right? And I want to thank you so much for joining me today, Hannah. Do you have any last words before you break for dinner in Berlin and I break for lunch in Lincoln? What are you going to be up to now that you're a master?
Trying to find work and also trying to get into a PhD program.
Good.
I'd like to continue working with termites.
Good.
Before
I
sign off, though, let me just drop one more termite fact.
Do it.
And that is, if you're listening from a temperate region, for example, the US or Europe, you've probably heard of termites just as wood feeders. But they don't all eat wood. In temperate regions, sure. In the world, 60% of termite genera eat soil, like earthworms. They are extremely important in the tropics. They're also fungus farmers and some other feeding types. But the soil feeders just blew my mind when I heard about them. So I encourage you to Google that because it's really, really cool.
So, and as you can tell, Hannah is very passionate about termites. And with that, I would like to thank everyone for listening.
Thank you.
We hope you learned something new about termites today. If you want to find us on the internet, you can find us at arthro-pod.blogspot.com. Check us out in our show notes. We're going to put some interesting links from Hannah, which will include cannibalism, nestmate grooming, 24-year-old captive termite colonies, and, of course, gut flagellates. You can find me on Twitter at JodyBugsMeUNL. Give Hannah a follow at BerlinBugGirl. She posts beautiful pictures and termite tidbits along with fun videos. Thanks again for letting us be part of your day. Stay calm and respect the critters.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time, same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod Gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.